talking about a home.
From the people who bring you Charleston Home and Design Magazine, the Charleston Home and Design Show, the Daniel Island Luxury Home Tour, the Charleston Fall Home Show, CharlestonHomeAndDesign.com, and TryAnInteriorDesigner.com, this is Talking About a Home. Talking About a Home is a home show on the radio, featuring interviews with local experts, home tips, trends, and ideas you need to know to make your home better. I'm Michael Blaze with Five Star Real Estate, and this is Talking About a Home.
That's waiting up for me, that I call my own. Through the dark, through the door, through where no one's been before, but it feels like home. They can say it all sounds crazy. They can say I've lost my mind. I don't care, so call me crazy. We can live in a world that we design. 'Cause every night I lie in bed, the brightest colors fill my head. A million dreams are keeping me awake.
Good afternoon. I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and I want to thank you for listening to Talking About a home show on the radio. That was A Million Dreams by Ziv Zafman, in addition to the great Chris Isaacs Talking About a Home, and special thanks to our show producer, Christine Sinanen, for coming up with today's home theme song. In addition to our radio show Talking About a Home, we also publish Charleston Home and Design Magazine, winner of the American Society of Interior Designers Excellence in Design Media Award, and also winner of the American Institute of Architects Charleston Chapter's Honor Award for Journalism. You may also be familiar with the two custom home shows we organize, the Charleston Home and Design Show, which happens every January, and the Charleston Fall Home Show, which happened about a month ago, both at the Gilliard Center in downtown Charleston. And we also organize the Daniel Island Luxury Home Tour, which happens every April. Well, today we've got a great show lined up for you. We're going to be talking to Bob Hervey, the executive director of East Cooper Habitat for Humanity, about an event that they've got coming up this coming Friday, September 27th. Also, we'll be talking with Helen Legree with Legree Farms, and that you may know that name. It's a very, very old Charleston name, Legree, spelled L-E-G-A-R-E. And if you're new to the area, most people pronounce it Laguerre, but that would be a tip-off that you have moved here and are not haven't been here a long time. So Helen Legree, the Legree family own a working farm on John's Island, and we had a chance to talk with Helen recently. Also, we'll be talking with Brad Hilfrink with Mr. Critter. And boy, we have a lot of critters around the Charleston area, ranging from, I mean, my wife told me that she was in the driveway the other day in a family of raccoons, mama raccoon and babies, just walked on by, heading toward the marsh. We've got a lot of critters, and in the news this week I was reading about, I guess the Citadel's mess hall has a mouse and rat problem. And Brad Hilfrink with Mr. Critter can take care of all of those different critters. He has removed an opossum that decided to make their home at our house, and that was pretty interesting. He's removed bats from our house in the past. different house. Lots and lots of, and of course, then the run-of-the-mill mice and rats that we get sometimes in our house. And you know, the first thing you think of is to put some traps down or some maybe some poison, but definitely not the right way. These animals migrate inside your house certain times a year, and then outside of your house. But if you ever have one of those critters that you want removed, he removes them humanely, except for the mice and rats. Those he gets rid of. But also, we'll be talking with interior designer Michelle Sauter and Tabitha Circio with One Coast Design. And then finally, we've got a bonus interview with Rick Jackson with Carolina Machine Finishing. That's his day job as the owner of Carolina Machine Finishing, but his real passion is a volunteer organization that originates right here in Charleston called Remember. And Remember takes teams of local doctors from MUSC to different countries halfway around the world that usually they're predominantly Muslim countries, and they aid the minority Christian populations in those different countries. It's very dangerous work and very rewarding. And we'll be talking with Rick Jackson, and there's an opportunity for you to help as well. Have a great weekend. If you're just joining us, I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and today's radio show is coming to you from Stephen Shell Living, located at 640 Coleman Boulevard, across from Moultrie Middle School in Mount Pleasant. And now we're talking with Bob Hervey with East Cooper Habitat for Humanity. How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Tim.
Good, good. Bob, I understand the East Cooper Habitat for Humanity has an event coming up next Friday.
That's correct.
Next Friday, and that's September 27th.
Yes, and it's from 6 to 8 p.m., and it will be at the Daniel Island headquarters of Blackbaud. They have a new headquarters building at 65 Fairchild Street. And we'll be there from 6 to 8 on that Friday night. We'll have live auctions. We'll have silent auctions. We'll have a dance band. We'll have heavy hors d'oeuvres. We'll have an open bar. We'll have games where people can win trips and lots of opportunities to have a good time and dance the night away.
What's the event called?
The event is called Hearts and Hammers.
Gotcha. Okay, Hearts and Hammers. And I'm sure East Cooper Habitat does different fundraisers throughout the year. Is this one of your bigger ones?
We really only do two fundraisers. One is a golf tournament in the spring, and then this is our only other major fundraiser. We don't like to keep asking people for money, but we sure do appreciate it when they do come out and support us. And so this is the opportunity for this year to come out and support us.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Excellent. And so it's happening on Friday, September 27th at the brand new Blackbaud?
Yes, at 65 Fairchild Street on Daniel Island. It's the global headquarters building for Blackbaud.
Oh, I bet they have. I've never been inside, but I bet they have a huge like atrium or a lobby area. Is that where it's taking place?
They have a lovely area with a long hallway with that's kind of like an atrium, but we're actually having it in their cafeteria / meeting room, which has a stage and dance floor and is really set up to make it a great evening.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we all like to go out to restaurants and do different things for entertainment, and this is an opportunity to have a great time, eat and drink, and you're doing it for a good purpose, a good reason, which is makes you feel even better after that.
That's right. And, you know, our mission is to provide homes for people who otherwise could not afford to have a home. And we have built 77 homes. We're working on the 77th home right now. And so that's 77 families that otherwise wouldn't have had the opportunity to own a home. And, you know, part of what happens when a family gets a home is that they have improved outcomes as far as grades for their school children. They tend to have better health, and they also tend to keep their jobs and be more stable as a family. And so, you know, this is an opportunity to help some families really make a change in their lives.
Mm-hmm. And if for some reason, oh, by the way, how much are tickets?
Tickets are $75 for a person or $125 for a couple.
Oh, nice. Okay. $75 per person, $125 a couple. And if someone cannot make the event but would still like to make a donation, how do they do that?
Absolutely. Whether they would like to purchase tickets and come to the event or whether they would just like to make a donation, we just have them go to our website, which is EastCooperHabitat.org, O-R-G.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is that where they would buy the tickets for the event as well?
Yes, there's a link there to go and buy the tickets, yeah.
All right, super. Well, don't miss Hearts and Hammers, the major annual fundraiser for East Cooper Habitat for Humanity. It's happening next Friday, September 27th, on Daniel Island, and visit EastCooperHabitat.org for more information. Right, Bob?
That's correct.
All right. Well, we've been talking with Bob Hervey with East Cooper Habitat for Humanity. Thanks again, Bob.
Thank you, Tim.
If you're just joining us, I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine. And now we've got a real treat for you. We are talking with Helen Legree with Legree Farms from Johns Island. How are you, Helen?
I'm great.
Good. Helen, take a moment and tell our listeners, we have a lot of newcomers to the Charleston area, and they may not be aware of Legree Farms and how far back Legree Farms goes here in the Charleston area.
Well, we've been farming on Johns Island since 1725. My brother and sister and I are the ninth generation of the Legrees to farm on Johns Island. We've done everything from, you know, raise cotton, indigo. We've always had cattle and sheep, and not always had sheep, but we have had sheep on and off over the years. My grandfather grew a lot of potatoes. My daddy grew a lot of soybeans and corn, and we've kind of changed our focus over the years and tried to keep up with what was going on, you know, with things around us. Mm-hmm. In the late 70s, early 80s, we started growing some sod. When I came back home to the farm in the late 80s, we went into the nursery business, and we've slowly morphed out of the sod and nursery business, even though we'd still grow a little bit of sod and some beech and marsh grass renourishment plants. But we've kind of gone back to our roots. We're growing vegetables again, and a lot of beef and pork and laying hens. We have chickens meat available, and the new thing for us is water buffalo meat. But we've got a long history of farming, and proud of our history in Charleston and on Johns Island.
Mm. On a working farm, you've got to be able to be willing to make a lot of changes, don't you? Just changing with what's happening in the marketplace. And
absolutely. And if you don't change, you don't stick around. And we've seen a lot of farmers in the last just few years that are gone now. And we've just had to learn to adapt and change. And when the economy changes and things sometimes make you change, and you got to be ready to make those changes, and you can't be stuck in what you used to do and how you used to do it.
Must be a lot of pressures on Legree Farms on Johns Island because of all the development that's taking place on Johns Island. I bet the developers would love to get a hold of your property.
Oh,
huh?
Absolutely. We have water on three sides of our property, so it makes it even more valuable. But Johns Island is a huge island. It's the third largest island on the eastern seaboard. And so there's a lot of land out there to develop, and unfortunately the roads and the infrastructure has not kept up with the development. So sitting in traffic is something new for us on Johns Island, but we're learning to adapt to that too.
Right, right. Well, talk about some of the things that that us city folk can take advantage of when it comes to Legree Farms. Talk about the rolling markets, for example.
Okay, well, the rolling market, we've been doing this about 2 years. We have two buses now. They're 15-passenger buses that we have taken the seats out of, and we've added a refrigerator and a freezer and a lot of shelving. And we do vegetables, we do meat, we do eggs, we have our jams, jellies, pickles, relishes, we have honey, and it changes what we have. The basic stuff doesn't change. You know, we have potatoes and we have sweet potatoes and those kind of things all the time, but the season changes. You know, we're rolling now into summer vegetables, and of course, my favorite summer vegetable, sweet corn, is a June. You know, that's when it comes in, is June. And if you work it right, you can pick corn most of the summer now. And, of course, watermelons and cantaloupes and yellow squash and zucchini and all that. But we go around to different places during the day. We go to a lot of businesses. We have most days we have five stops, and we're there about an hour, hour and a half at the different businesses, depending on the size. And then late afternoon, 4:30, 6:30, 7 o'clock, we go to into neighborhoods, apartment complexes, and people just come in. They actually walk into the bus and pick out their purchase, and then we check them out right there by the front door, and they're back down the steps and out the bus. And
wow, what a great service.
Yeah, and in the summertime, the air conditioner's running wide open in there, and in the wintertime, it's nice and warm, and it's just been a real good thing. We've been able to get out. We're going into some food deserts where there are no grocery stores for people. And so it's just been a really good thing for us, and I think it's good for people, you know, when they can come out, you know, for a few minutes at work and purchase fresh vegetables, and, you know, that's just a win-win for everybody.
Does the Legree Farms rolling market, does it play kind of the same music that the ice cream trucks do?
No, but maybe we need some music on, you know, to get people to to come out. But no,
are the adults chasing after the truck like the kids do the ice cream?
that would be pretty funny. But no, but it is, 'cause some of the places that we go, the businesses, they've got like one person that has a window, you know, their office is by the window, and they can see when we pull up, and they're like the lookout. And so they start hollering out that we're there, and we go down to CPW on St. Philip Street, and you can tell when I pull in and one lady sees us out there, they all come streaming out the building. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and maybe you have some insight on this, but when you go to one of the grocery stores here in Charleston, sometimes they've got like a special section for local vegetables, but more often you don't really know where these vegetables are coming from.
Well, and that's the thing. You don't have a clue where they're coming from, and almost always everything on our rolling market, if we haven't grown it, I know where it's coming from. I've got a buddy in Florida that we're getting a lot of stuff out of season. I'm getting apples out of North Carolina from a guy I went to Clemson with, and you know, that kind of, the only thing that I don't always know where they're coming from is avocados. We can't grow avocados here, and takes a very dry, humid, we're just too humid here to grow them. So I don't always know where the avocados, they're a great seller for me, so I'll keep carrying them, but I don't always know where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm. Well, besides the rolling markets, Legree Farms also has a vegetable club and also a butcher's club. Talk about those.
Well, the vegetable club, and we have been doing a community-supported agriculture for years, which is a CSA. So the vegetable club is kind of a takeoff on the CSA. And the butcher's club, they all work kind of basically the same way from our point of view, from the farmer's point of view. You're getting money up front so that you have the money to plant the crops, buy the seed, the fertilizer, pay your labor and all that stuff, and get your crop in the ground without going to the bank. Same thing with the butcher's club. It gives us the money up front to buy feed and do all the things that we have to do to get the animals ready to process. So it gives us money up front without having to borrow money from the bank. But from the consumer's point of view, it allows you to get the vegetables and the meat that you want. With the vegetable club, you can come in each week to the rolling market and pick out whatever vegetable you want. If you want all sweet corn this week, you can pick out whatever amount, whatever you want, and you get 10% off your purchase, and then we just subtract it from your balance. The Butcher's Club is the same way with the meat. You come in and pick out whatever you want. Like I was telling you earlier, I have a gentleman who buys a Butcher's Club, and he only gets ribeye steaks. That's all he ever gets. It doesn't take him long to use his Butcher's Club mm-hmm. balance up. But if it's somebody that uses a lot of hamburger or ground beef, it takes them a lot longer. And you get 20% off of your of the retail price for the Butcher's Club. And with the CSA, the Community Supported Agriculture, the same thing. You get your money up front, but we put whatever's ready that week. You get 8 or 9 vegetables in your bag each week. We do 9 weeks in the spring, summer. We start, we finish the last week in June with the 9 weeks, and then we take the heat of the summer off with the CSA, and we come back about the 1st of October, and we do 6 more weeks. So we do 15 weeks with the Community Supported Agriculture. And but we put in the bag whatever vegetable is ready that week. And so you don't really get to choose, but a lot of people like that too, because it's made them learn to cook things that they wouldn't mm-hmm. go in the grocery store or come on the rolling market and pick out.
Yeah, not only that, but if you're like our household, we don't eat enough vegetables. And I think if we had a bag of vegetables every week, we would be like, okay, we don't want them to go to waste. We've got to make sure to finish these. And, everybody has heard about all the fancy restaurants downtown doing the farm-to-table concept, and that's basically what you're doing with the rolling markets and the Vegetable Club and Butcher's Club at Legree Farms. It's farm-to-table. Well, Helen, how can folks get more information about these programs at Legree Farms?
Well, we have a great website, legreefarms.com. We also have a Facebook page for Legree Farms, and we also have a Rolling Market Facebook page. And one other thing, Tim, that I'd like to mention, we also do a lot of agritourism at the farm. In October, we do our pumpkin patch, and they can come out and visit the farm. They can ride the hayride and feed the cows and visit the barnyard and pick a pumpkin. We do farm camp on June and July. We have some weeks of farm camp. We still have some openings in those. And we do a lot of birthday parties and that kind of stuff. So there's opportunities to come to the farm and visit the farm also. And you can always give us a call at 843-559-0788.
And Legree Farms is located where?
We're on Johns Island right off of River Road. We're about 5 miles from Maybank Highway on the south end of River Road.
Gotcha. Everybody should take a trip out to Legree Farms. And Legree is spelled...
L-E-G-A-R-E, and the website is legreefarms.com. It's one of those old Charleston names. It's not pronounced like it's spelled.
Right, right. And the people that have been here a little bit know that Legree is pronounced Legree, not Laguerre.
Exactly.
So, very good. Well, it was so nice talking with you. Helen, and we'll have you back in here every couple months to tell everyone about some of the programs at Legree Farms. We've been talking with Helen Legree with Legree Farms on Johns Island. Thanks, Helen. If you're just joining us, I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and we have on the phone Brad Hilfrink with Mr. Critter. How you doing, Brad?
Good morning, Tim. How are you today, my friend?
Doing great. Brad, appreciate you taking a moment to talk to us. You're on the way out to a job, is that correct?
Yes, sir. Going out to deal with Mother Nature's little critters.
What part of town are you heading to?
We're actually going out on the Kiowa today.
Okay. Do you do a lot of jobs out on Kiowa Island?
Oh, yeah. We do at least 100 jobs a year just on that island.
Gotcha. What kinds of critters typically do you run into on Kiowa Island that the property owners want you to remove?
Well, it's pretty much the same as everywhere: rats, bats, birds, raccoons, stuff like that. But Kiowa does have an interesting critter that most of Charleston doesn't have. A lot of people don't know that Kiowa is our nation's largest population of bobcats.
Bobcats,
and
yeah.
We do deal with bobcats that start getting too close to homes.
Gotcha. Well, this time of year, Brad, a lot of people are enjoying the outdoors, and specifically, they have created spaces outdoors. They're outdoor living spaces, basically creating rooms, outdoor living rooms, and outdoor kitchens, and pergolas, using the outdoors as much as possible that we, you know, that we can when the weather is so nice here in the Charleston area. But what kinds of issues can you help homeowners with when it comes to their outdoor living spaces?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, Tim. Probably the number one call that we get for outdoor living spaces is spiders.
Okay.
Spiders filling up all the little cracks and crevices on the outdoor kitchen or even in the furniture itself. And we've been real successful with doing a spider treatment of 100% eugenol oils, no poisons or anything like that, no pesticides. And we actually coat down the outdoor spaces, the furniture, the kitchens, the little pergolas, stuff like that. And what it does is it doesn't allow a spider to be able to cast a web and stick.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes it uncomfortable for spiders to live. Charleston has a pretty bad black widow problem, and eugenol oils are one of the real good things to keep them under control.
Gotcha. You know, I've always heard that you shouldn't kill spiders, that spiders are good because they eat bugs and they're actually a valuable part of the food chain.
You're absolutely right, actually. And, you know, a poison spider could also be consumed by another animal, like a lizard or something, and kill that animal. That's why we don't use poisons and pesticides. We just use eugenol oils, make it uncomfortable for them, make them not like the area, and they just leave it.
And that's called a eugenol oil, is that correct?
It's a eugenol oil, basically the extract of cinnamon, spearmint, peppermint, those kind of hot oils, you know, that have a little bit of a sting to them. And the oil itself creates a film that won't allow the animal to spin a web.
I gotcha.
So, yeah, it actually works really good, and it doesn't smell bad. You know, you can kind of pick the smell. You want your outdoor kitchen to smell right. And no one knows that you're actually doing pest management.
Mm-hmm. And does it rub off on you? If you're sitting on a chair that has that oil on it, will it make your skin slippery or anything?
No, not at all. In fact, once you spray, you just give it about 1 hour. It all dries up, and you don't even see it. You kind of smell it a little bit, but once it dries, it doesn't affect us in any way. And quite honestly, I don't spray like the top of the furniture. You spray the bottom and the back. That's where all the spiders want to stay, you know, in the dark crevices and stuff.
So it's a good thing to, it keeps the spiders away. They actually will stay away from you where you're congregating in your outdoor living space, but it's not killing the spiders altogether.
Exactly. And in fact, using like spearmint and cinnamon, a real strong, potent mix of, you're also repelling things like reptiles, snakes, lizards, frogs, stuff like that will also be repelled by the smell, but at the same time will not hurt them at all.
Gotcha. Okay, good. Well, that's kind of a 5-for-1 kind of deal. You're keeping lots of different critters away from your outdoor living space with one treatment. And I'm sure that this is something that a homeowner could attempt on their own, but it's better to call a professional like Mr. Critter.
Well, you know, it is better to have someone like me come out and at least show you how to do it. You know, we do this on a very regular basis, and we have some clients that just have us come out and we explain it to them and, you know, show them how to maintain the issue, because obviously when it rains, it washes away, and, you know, over time it fades away, so it has to be reapplied, you know, fairly often.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's just easier and more cost effective for the owner to actually do it themselves. So we do it both ways.
I gotcha. Some people don't want to even mess with it, and you know, that's when they'll call Mr. Critter. What about your cooking out in your outdoor kitchen, and you know, you wrap it up and turn off the grill and head inside to eat, and then maybe that the smell, or maybe you've left some crumbs on the floor or something, it attracts rats, it attracts raccoons. How can Mr. Critter help alleviate those kinds of issues in your outdoor living space?
Okay, well, another good question. What we normally do is tell people right off the bat, clean everything up before you go to bed. Don't leave grease and scraps out overnight, because that's what attracts them. Now, rats and raccoons, they're animals of habit. So if they come to your backyard and they get a feed, just one time, get something to eat, they will come back constantly looking for another feed.
Mm-hmm.
So the main thing is to not, you know, is to clean before you go to bed, and not, you know, the next morning or the next time you grill. But if the animals do get there and they do find it interesting and like to come around, Mr. Critter comes out and we can set traps and we can catch those target animals and remove them, and then you can, you know, proceed forward with not allowing the next one to get a free feed.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Well, how can folks get more information about Mr. Critter?
The best way to do it is just to call my cell phone. It's 843-205-0551. That rings my pocket, and we can always set up an appointment. And anything in the local area is a free inspection.
Gotcha. And usually when someone is going to pick up the phone to call Mr. Critter, they have an active problem. How responsive is Mr. Critter when you get that phone call?
Oh, you'll always see us within 24 hours. We're all over town every day, so if your job comes in close to us, you'll see us the same day. A worst-case scenario, you'll see us the next day. We do respond to emergencies. If there's a live animal in your living space, it needs to be removed right now, and we respond to a lot of situations like that.
Gotcha. Okay, good deal. Well, very good. And what was that website again?
The website would be, sorry, Tim. The website is MrCritterSC.com.
MrCritterSC.com.
That's right, and you can just kind of see us, you know, on the web, and then you get the phone number from there and call us direct.
Okay, very good. Well, we have been talking with Brad Hilfrink with Mr. Critter. Thanks so much, Brad.
Thank you, Tim. Hope you have a great day.
If you're just joining us, I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and today's radio show is coming to you from Jean's Custom Workroom, and they're located in West Ashley at 1610 Sam Rittenberg Boulevard. And now we're talking with interior designer and artist Michelle
Sauter.
And also Tabitha Circio. How are you ladies doing?
We're doing great. Thanks, Tim, for having us.
Good.
We're so excited to be here.
Well, great. Well, it's great having you. And tell everybody about One Coast Design.
Well, we're a design firm located in Somerville, and we are recently moved to the area from South Florida. And we are in the midst of a renovation project of a house that was built in 1859, which will be our new showroom/design studios.
Well, that's great. That's great. So did this house need a lot of work?
Oh, yeah. It said we did a complete chain of title. It's probably had about 10 people that have lived in it throughout the years. And when we first started at the beginning of this year, we were underneath the house and fixing a lot of things that needed to be addressed, mm-hmm. so that we could get to the pretty stuff.
Mm, very good. Yeah, you gotta. Unfortunately, sometimes you end up spending a lot of money on the things that people can't see.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I will say my husband's an engineer, mm-hmm. so he suited up and went underneath it and all around it to make sure that what we were biting off we could handle. So,
need that strong foundation.
Exactly. And he's very into safety and mm-hmm. wanted to make sure the house was sound before and really kind of get an idea for how much we were going to have to invest in the property to get it up to the standard where we could, like, really use it.
Gotcha. And this will become a retail store for One Coast Design.
That is correct.
And what will people see when they visit your store?
They will get to see my artwork. And I'm a master picture framer as well, so all the artwork hanging on the walls I framed, and that's actually my background, is in art galleries, and I started doing interior design back in the late 80s. I started getting a lot of clients who wanted me to come and help them out with their spaces, and I was doing yacht interiors at the time too, mainly painting for boats. So I started out in small spaces and then moved my way up to high-end residential and then started doing hotel projects, and it just went on from there.
Well, how does being an artist help you on the interior design end of things?
Yeah, the design piece is, I bring a unique angle to it because I do understand color so well. And I love to be able to pull things together, color combinations that people didn't think went together. And I can also see undertones very well, being a trained artist. So I think that helps and informs a lot of my design, is just really my deep understanding of color theory.
Gotcha. And you two have worked with Jean's Custom Workroom in the past, is that right?
Well, actually, we're working currently with them on this project, and they are doing all of the Roman shades that are all hand-painted Irish linen, and we wouldn't trust them to anybody but this workroom, because they are fabulous, and Jean came to the house, and she just loves it and oohed and aahed and fell in love with it like we did. And she's just been so wonderful, and she's so excited to work on our project.
Well, that's great. You know, there's quite a few homeowners, usually the owners of second homes who have bought a second home, and maybe they've built a second home here in Charleston.
Yes.
And we've gone on photo shoots before where the walls are completely filled with works of art. And if someone had a situation like that, would you be helping them choose art at other galleries in addition to your own?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm used to working with collections that come along with the homeowners, and I'm very familiar with multiple residences and them wanting to move their collections around. Fine art placement is something I do a lot of, and that obviously includes pieces that they already own, pieces they'd like to collect, and maybe some pieces they'd like to fill in with. Let's say they fall in love with something from my website. I can create pieces for them. I usually do site visits, do all the measuring, and work with them with their colors. And not that I match the painting to the colors, but usually they tell me what style they like of my paintings, and I create one just for them.
Nice. Are there any tips you can give our listeners about rules or anything like that of like hanging artwork?
It's, you know what, Tim, it's tricky because every situation is different. Usually I take into consideration a lot of that, what I call negative space. It's not just the shape of the wall, but it's the furniture that we're going to have in the room, the light fixtures, the height of the ceiling. All of those things kind of inform where we're going to place the artwork. So, and I usually come up with a couple of different layout schemes, wouldn't you say? And then we just figure out which one's going to work the best. And I put it all on paper first, so we're all on the same page. Pardon the pun.
Do you do everything just by eye, or are you like?
Pretty much. I'm used to hanging a gallery for a show in about 2 hours, so I'm used to banging it out. But usually, when I work with clients, we work closely with one another, and we kind of decide ahead of time. Like which pieces are going to go in which rooms and kind of what we'd like the focal point to be. Mm-hmm. And I usually like to use paintings as a jumping off point, even especially in interior design. I like to do it the opposite. I don't like to match the artwork to the interior. I like to take a piece of art and let that inform kind of our design direction and colorway for the room. And I find that clients like that better. It doesn't feel matchy-matchy. It feels like it keeps the artwork kind of the center and the focal point of the room, especially if it's a piece they've had in their collection for a while and something that means a lot to them. It's like it gives an emotional anchor to everything.
And Tabitha, did you also move up here from South Florida as well?
I did not. I recently relocated to Charleston from Charlotte, North Carolina. With my husband, who is also an engineer, strangely enough, and my background is actually in dance. And after getting my family settled here, I said, you know, I need a creative outlet. And randomly through my own home renovation, found Michelle, and it was karma, kismet, and here we are.
Well, I guess that there's something to be said with opposites attract, right? So you've got two artsy people, and you've got two engineer husbands, and they're the by the book. They love reading manuals and that kind of thing, right?
You are not kidding. And they get along so well, it's a little scary.
Right, right. Yeah, and you're so much better off than maybe if you married an artsy guy, right? You never get anything done.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Well, good deal. Well, how can folks get more information about One Coast Design?
Well, they can go on our website, which is onecoastdesign.com. They can give us a call at 843-879-2152 and just give us a call and tell us, you know, what they're working on, and then we can figure out if we want to set up an appointment and come out and see the situation and see what's doing.
And what's the target date for the opening of your shop?
The target date is late fall, so we're kind of being a little smudgy with that date because we want to get a little bit farther ahead. The exterior is completely finished, and we're working on the interior now, so we have to make everything cute before people can come and see it.
I gotcha.
So, anyway.
I would very much like to add, if you would like to follow along with the progress of this historic restoration, you can follow along on Instagram. The name of the house is the Coburn Hutchinson House, and our Instagram handle is Coburn_Hutchinson_house. It's a wonderful, wonderful feed with lots of inspiration, lots of behind the scenes, before and afters, and we think you'll really like it.
All right, great. Well, we have been talking with interior designer and artist Michelle Souter and Tabitha Circio. Thanks so much, ladies.
Thank you so much for having us, Tim.
If you're just joining us, I'm Tim Barkley with Charleston Home and Design Magazine, and now we're talking with Rick Jackson about the nonprofit Remember. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing very well, Tim. How are you?
Good, thank you. Rick, take a moment and tell everyone about the local nonprofit called Remember.
Remember is a Charleston-based nonprofit, faith-based organization, Tim, that works around the world in not only impoverished but persecuted areas, where we go in and we our primary mission is to work with children who have lost their parents due to martyrdom, or families who have lost the primary breadwinner due to martyrdom. Of course, it's Mission Plus. We have occasion to work with lots of folks of all faiths, of all denominations, around the world as we go into those areas to bring. Sometimes it's just resources, but sometimes it's medical aid, sometimes it's construction work, and we've even been able to build some children's homes in different parts of the world, safe houses where people can flee to find respite from persecution.
And these are mainly Christians who are in the minority in those particular countries. What countries?
I just have come back from Myanmar, which we would know as Burma, south of China, east of India. So Burma is a primary country that we work in. We work in Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, North Sudan, South Sudan. The places that really aren't places that aren't probably make it on your bucket list for a vacation.
Yeah, and they're places where Christians are in the minority, and very oftentimes the Christians are hated, they're despised. There's genocides that go on in those countries, and I guess I'm thinking about the recent bombings that took place in Sri Lanka, and I was, I'm sure there was a lot of people who were a little bit miffed that some of the politicians referred to them as Easter worshipers rather than just calling them Christians. And in Sri Lanka, the Christians are minorities also, and there are those that just want to wipe the Christians off the earth. And talk about the people themselves that Remember is helping.
Yeah, and we do, Tim. I mean, we are a Christian-based organization, and we do go in and our primary target is to minister those who have lost the primary breadwinner, which can reduce a woman to try to feed her family, because in a lot of those cultures, they will kill the primary breadwinner in order to force, basically enslave the woman into a lifestyle where she's forced to recant her faith. So she's basically just becomes a slave to the state. But when we go into those places, our goal is not necessarily to convert them from their religion, but our goal is to minister to those who are professing Christians and to minister to, we minister to Muslims, we minister to Buddhists. There's no group, people group that we won't care for. So when we take medical teams in, there's no checklist at the triage table to determine what your faith is. You have a medical need, you have a heart issue, you have an eye issue. We've treated people with shrapnel who come into the clinics. We don't turn someone down because of their faith. We love them, we care for them, they get the exact same care, the exact same medical treatment, exact same amount of love, because that's what true Christianity does.
And Rick, you work with a lot of local doctors taking them. What do you think motivates those doctors to get on an airplane for 21 hours and then work their tails off and then get back on a plane and I'm sure they're exhausted through this entire process. But what do you think motivates these doctors?
That's a great picture that you draw there, because we're talking about medical professionals, and Charleston is blessed to have an incredible wealth of faith-based medical professionals here in this beautiful city. And they'll pay for their own trip. It's not funded by the organization, it's not funded by others. Those professionals pay for their own way. They take time off from their work. They're not getting paid while they're gone. They do sit on an airplane for 21 straight hours to get to the destination, to then work in unconscionable conditions with a little bit of fear of potential persecution themselves. It's not air conditioned, you're sweating profusely, and knowing there's this little element of, concern, but they do it because it's who they are. They do it because what they've experienced in their own life, and they're becoming Christians, and they'll do anything. They want to serve like Jesus did, and they'll be willing to lay down their life. They're not looking to die, but they're willing to lay down their life and to do that, and to watch them work. It's amazing when you get a doctor go for the first time, and he's a little concerned that, I really need to have my mental faculties together. We need to shut down the clinic at 5 o'clock and go back so I can be rested, understand all those things. A lot of times I organize and set up the clinics. And then at 5 o'clock, when you look out in the gate, the people are lined up down the street and they have real needs. When I start shutting the clinic down at 5 o'clock, it's the doctors that say, you can't shut the clinic down. There's people waiting out there. And it just is a great reminder that it doesn't matter when you close the gate, 5 o'clock, 9 o'clock, midnight, there will always be people around the world that need help. So it's a reminder. Hopefully it's a reminder to your listeners that you can't give enough. You can't go enough. There will always be a need, but we have to meet those needs.
And I remember you told me a story around Christmas time about a father who had, I'm not sure if it was Muslims or someone who didn't like Christians was demanding that they forego their Christian religion and convert to Islam, and he refused. And I guess what I'm thinking is we take these things for granted in the United States. I heard a story recently about how church membership is down, but that doesn't mean that people still aren't spiritual and they don't believe in God. It's just that maybe they're not going to an organized church as much. But I wonder about that father you told me about who died, who right in front of his family, because he refused to give up his Christian religion.
And sitting here looking at you reminds me of that conversation, because you had your daughters there so we could talk, and I really appreciate your heart and love and care for those people. But that father did. He was in what would now be considered South Sudan. We were in the Kordofan region, and everybody probably listening to the radio show has heard of Darfur. Darfur is a province in the central, that's in that band of central part of Sudan that separates North Sudan from South Sudan. But Darfur is bordered up against Chad, so the news media can get into Darfur. And in Darfur, there were a million people displaced, and over 200,000 people killed for their faith, purely religious genocide. What people don't have never heard of is the province just to the east of Darfur is a province called Kordofan. Kordofan had 1 million people persecuted to death, 4 million people displaced, four times what was in Darfur, and the world doesn't even know about it. Mm-hmm. Because it's to get in there, you risk your life to get in there. I've been in the Kordofan, and that's where I met this particular family. And the lady, her name was Sadia. And her husband, they were being forced to convert to Islam, and they politely just refused. They could not recant their faith. It was who they were. It's what they believe with all their heart. And when the terrorists came to their home that night, they bound the husband, drug him out in the front yard, bound him, raped his wife and children and the daughters in front of him, and then doused him with gasoline, bound in the front yard, and set his body on fire. Those children, that wife and daughters who had just been horribly brutalized, had to watch the husband and dad burn to death, and they left, and left them to clean up the mess. Well, who in America would ever think of something like that happening? Mm-hmm. It's totally unconscionable that it would happen. We don't go in there with hatred for that. If we could minister to those Muslims who did that, we would do just that. We would love them the same, love their families the same. But it gives us occasion to be able to go in to minister to a Sadia, to care for her, to give her financial support, to help her kids be able to go to school. Because if they don't, they're forced into the exact same type of terrorist mentality, and we don't want to see that happen. And don't want the intent, will of the father or the mother to be subverted by someone who thinks they have the power to force that on someone else.
I bet a lot of our listeners are sitting there wondering, would I have the strength to not give in to these terrorists and say, okay, I'll convert to Islam just to save your life? You know, we take religion for granted so much in United States. I wonder about myself. Push comes to shove, if I would have that strength. And I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there who would say, oh yeah, I would do what I had to do to save my life.
I've stood in the fields with people in South Sudan, North Sudan, Egypt, Tim, people that are very simple, that we would probably look down on them. If you were working behind a retail counter and they came through, you would probably look down on them. I mean, I just say that as me, not, any condemnation of any people group or mm-hmm. nationality. And when I stand there and I hear their stories, I realize I'm standing in the presence of greatness. And I wonder the same thing. Would I be able to do that? I purpose in my heart to have that, but I've never been put in that position. The worst I've ever had is somebody say something negative about me, and that hurts my feelings. Mm-hmm. Could I actually die for what I believe? I would hope I could, but I don't know. I've never been forced to do that. These are people who do it. They're heroes. They're beyond heroes. It's people, and they're forgotten. Nobody cares for them, and it's people that we want to take help, aid, and ministry to.
How many trips a year does Remember take to some of these countries?
There's as many as three. There's always at least one construction group. I just have come back from Myanmar, south of China. So there's always a construction group that goes. So we love those listeners that listen to your program because of their. Well, we would love to have builders, cabinet makers, fence builders, but tile setters. All those guys can go and gals can go and work in these areas. Some places we can't take the gals just because it's just not appropriate. And we don't want to put them at excess risk. But so we do that. We have a dental team that'll be going. We have a medical team that goes annually. So there's at least usually 3 to 4 trips or more a year. And then if somebody just wants to go on a more intimate private basis, I've been willing to travel with builders, families to go and where they can go. There's always opportunity. You can go and you can go to Southeast Asia, as I've mentioned to you and your daughters, to go and play soccer mm-hmm. with little orphan children for a week. You could have built a building. You could have participated in a medical clinic. You could have given an enormous amount of money. And we're very grateful for what you have done personally in Charleston Home and Design. But you can take your daughters there and play soccer and color and braid hair and paint toenails and probably have a more greater long-lasting effect than you can in many of those other areas. So you don't have to be a doctor to go. You don't have to be a builder to go. If you can paint a toenail and kind of stay in the lines, you don't even really have to stay in the lines. Those kids recognize love. And that's what we go to do is love them.
Well, that's great to know that I'm sure we have a lot of listeners that would be interested in donating to Remember, but there's also folks that have those skills that where they could donate their time and go on one of these mission trips and really have a great impact, really kind of, connect their trade, what they're doing for a living, to something that really is worthwhile and makes a difference for humanity.
That's exactly right. Where you can go, when you take a builder and you watch him put his skills together, that he's built some incredibly beautiful products that have been showcased in your publication. But to be able to go over there and take a piece of raw material and build a set of cabinets. And we have a group that have done that right here and build a set of cabinets in a home that probably, Tim, we're sitting in, you know, a beautiful facility right now with beautiful cabinetry, and these may have been the prettiest cabinets I've ever seen. Probably not a door exactly true, nor a rail or style exactly perfect.
Right, right. And the one thing that was very, very important to mention is 100% of the funds that are donated to Remember go to these mission trips, right?
That is correct. All the operational expenses are underwritten by local businesses, actually not all local, but businesses, and we certainly would welcome anybody who would want to help sponsor the operational side, because without the operational side, it's hard to have the ministry side. But 100% of every dollar that's given, there's nothing that's used for staff. There are no paid staff. It's all fund. It's all volunteer based. 100%. It's something you can give to, that if you give a dollar, a dollar goes to the need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at Christmas time, I think the state of South Carolina puts out a list of some of the Scrooge charities and nonprofits out there who take donations, and then a lot of them go into people's the administrators' pockets and the executives and things like that. And that's definitely not the case with Remember. How can folks get more information about Remember?
They can find us on the web, Tim, and you can actually sign up on there for the upcoming trip. So we've got a dental trip coming up, a medical trip coming up, and we're taking construction folks on both of those efforts as well. You can find us on the web at rememberthose.org. Rememberthose.org. If they wanted to just ask questions, if you don't mind, I'll give my cell phone number, and they're more than welcome to give me a call personally. So my cell phone number is 843-200-5261. Be happy to talk to anybody that was interested.
All right, great. Well, we have been talking with Rick Jackson about the local nonprofit Remember Those at rememberthose.org. Thanks so much, Rick.
Thank you, Tim.
You've been listening to Talking About a Home, a home show on the radio. Talking About a Home is brought to you by the publishers of Charleston Home and Design Magazine and the organizers of the Charleston Home and Design Show, the Daniel Island Luxury Home Tour, and the Charleston Fall Home Show. To make contact with any of the companies featured today, visit charlestonhomeanddesign.com. Home to over 200 local home-related companies motivated to work with you. That's charlestonhomeanddesign.com. Please tune in again next Saturday.